This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit. You've seen their teardowns all over the internet, the free repair guide for everything, and the ultimate marketplace for electronic tools and parts. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to iFixit.com/TWiT and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. On this 300th episode of Know-How,
this is Know-How.
Know-How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be pushing the knowledge into your know-hole.
That's right. On this, we didn't do anything special for 300, did we?
I mean, we saw it on the calendar, like, maybe we should do something special. But, you know, 300 is just, it's just a pit stop on the way to 400 and 500 and 1,000.
Oh, yeah, we're totally going to do 1,000.
We're so getting there.
Our knowledge will blot out the sun, right?
As people in the chat room are saying, oh, 300 episodes, so how long till I know everything? I think that's like 5, 12.
At least. And then we'll just start cycling back through again. Yeah. We'll just start from the beginning.
No, but folks, this is the 300th episode of Know How, which is amazing when you consider the fact that I first came into the show like episode 62. You came in episode 84. Right. So it's been a long time since we've been running the show.
Right, and partially why we didn't plan anything special for this is we didn't think we'd be doing it this long.
Yeah. I
figured we'd get to like 299 and then Leo and Lisa done. Would be like, done.
You know what? You've had a good run, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. No, but we're still here. We're still bringing your knowledge. And in fact, we are doing the last bit of Arduino 102. You may remember last year we did Arduino 101 where we went over things like switches, simple digital input and output, and now how to use something like an RTC. This
How PWM works.
Precisely. Yeah. But now we've been doing things like, okay, let's hook up to an I2C screen. Yeah. Let's use a real-time clock at the same time. Mm-hmm. Let's use the internal memory of an Arduino. Yeah. Today we're going to be doing something that people have been asking for the longest time, and that is, how do you take your Arduino and put it onto a network?
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I've been looking forward to that. I liked what we did with the OEL LED screen, and then I'm looking, and we've got the giant liquid crystal display for this project.
It's kind of toasty. Oh, people have been wanting this for the longest time because although it's nice to run an embedded project on Arduino, you know, something like lights, it would add a little extra something if I had the ability to control it or at least monitor it remotely. I can think of one instance in which I really wish I had remote monitoring set up. Like, for example, when my Arduino decided to start feeding my plants pure fertilizer.
Would be bad about that? Except all your plants dying.
Dying. Not just dying, but remember, when the plants die, they stop soaking up all the water, which means the water starts overflowing, which means your superior comes down and yells at you for all the brownish water coming down through the floor.
Yeah, why is it flooding up there? And so partially why you're talking about that, too, is isn't a lot of these projects that we're doing leading up to the eventual Growduino automation project that you've been doing?
Exactly. And what I want there is I want the capability to receive a notification when any event happens. So the lights turn on, the lights turn off, it starts watering, it starts fertilizing, it stops watering, it stops fertilizing, temperature, humidity. I mean, all of that, I want that logic in the Arduino. So it should be able to deal with it on its own. However, I still want to be able to monitor it remotely, either on an app or my laptop.
Or a separate Arduino.
Yeah. Something that allows me to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
And then you can start building in redundancies to say, hey, like, if I get this emergency code, shut down. Please stop watering everything.
Like, if my Arduino just sends, oh, by the way, I'm going to give your plants twice as much fertilizer as they should need, I should be able to override remotely and say, you know what? No, let's not do that.
Nah.
Let's stop that. Okay. So that's what we're going to be doing, which means we need to up our game because obviously an Arduino doesn't have a network interface. There's no Bluetooth. There's no Wi-Fi. There's no Ethernet built into a standard Nano or an Uno, which is what we've been using. In fact, we could even go one step up to something like the Mega, which is just a larger Arduino. It's got more memory. It's got more processing power. It's got more inputs and outputs. This also doesn't have any sort of network interface,
no.
Which is why we need something a little bit like this.
A breakout board.
Yeah, so this is a shield if you go to the overhead here. This just allows me to plug straight into the pins on either an Arduino Uno or an Arduino Mega and give it standard Ethernet. So I get Ethernet networking capabilities.
So you need all that just for Ethernet?
Well,
it's kind of a big shield.
Well, that's just the size. I mean, look, this is also a networking shield. This one's for the Nano. So this does the same thing. Because remember, the Uno and the Nano are essentially the same. The only difference is the board size and the format. So this is a Nano that's actually on top of the network interface board.
Oh, okay.
So it's nice and small.
That makes sense.
One thing, though. This works. This is fine. However, you're really limited by the amount of power that you have, and you're limited by the space. So although this is a fun form factor to play with, I would not develop on it. It's a pain in the butt to develop on.
But once you have your prototype finished and you've kind of moved along, you could do the smaller one, right?
Precisely, exactly. So what I'm going to do is I've got my standard Arduino Uno here. These pins just match up perfectly. So I just put it from the bottom over down. So this is now network ready. It's not automatic. When I turn it on, it's not like I have networking capabilities.
Right.
I still have to create software that will allow it to use the shield. But you'll see I have pass-throughs, so I can still access all my digital pins.
That's nice.
It's actually connected to the Uno via this, which is a different bus. It's a management bus. Additionally, I get access
SD
to
card.
This. I have a little SD card. Remember in the last episode, we showed people how to use the onboard EEPROM in order to store values that would not go away when I restarted.
Right. So now can we use basically a mass flash storage?
Absolutely. So I can put, I think this one will take up to 64 gigabyte of memory, which I don't know what I would do with that other than using it as a place to store log files.
I was going to say maybe video files or something.
I'm not going to run a video to an Arduino.
I don't know.
It's not going to work so well. But we're going to do some very simple, some basic commands, some basic demonstrations on how to use this so that you can build it into a project that you might already have.
Very cool.
I mean, imagine any time you've got the Arduino doing something, once you have this lesson down, you should be able to network enable it so you can make it do that something remotely.
Which is really nice, especially if you don't have access to it directly. Like you want to put it outside or something and not have to walk back and forth from your greenhouse to your house or something like that.
Or, for example, I have created one of these using Cayenne, which is something we were going to cover, but then we had all the
Persec
stuff. It's a My Devices that allows me to make an Internet of Things device very simply, very easily.
Oh, okay.
And I created two that are connected to the Dun light on the washer dryer in our house. So when that light turns on, it flips a relay that tells the Arduino that the Dun light has turned on, and then it texts the person whose laundry was in the machine. Super stupid, but it's like, okay, why not do that?
That's smart. I like that idea.
But in order for that to work, I need network capability. I can't use Cayenne unless I have a way onto the network.
Yeah.
There are Wi-Fi shields. However, I don't like using Wi-Fi for IoT. I'm not a big fan of that because Wi-Fi is temperamental sometimes, especially on a device as low power as a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino. For that, I really prefer something that's wired. That's one less thing that can go wrong. Yeah. And if I'm doing something like monitoring my garden, I don't want a flaky Wi-Fi AP to be the reason why suddenly it's dead.
Right. I mean, not to make light of it, but it is kind of a life or death situation when it comes, at least for your plants, as far as getting watered and fertilized. So probably should make it as redundant as possible and foolproof.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into this. First of all, we're going to do a little bit of wiring because this first example, we're going to pull almost directly from the example library on the Arduino sketch. It's actually one of the ones that are provided when you install Arduino.
Cool.
We need to power up these two potentiometers.
I've seen those before.
Yeah, this is like one of the very first 3D printed boards that we made. This is just a holder for the Raspberry Pi and a little teeny tiny breadboard.
Yeah.
So we're going to pull 5 volts and ground. There's my ground pin right there, like so. And I'm going to pull 5 volts right there, like so. And then I'm going to go into either side of this potentiometer. Because remember, the way that a potentiometer works is I need ground and 5 volts on the outside. There's 3 pins. So the outside pins get ground and 5 volts. The inside pin, that's the wiper, that will change as I rotate the potentiometer.
Mm-hmm.
That goes into my analog
inputs. That makes
sense, yeah. Right. So now I'm going to go from ground here to ground here. So I'm just daisy chaining these.
You're a madman.
And 5 volt here to 5 volt there.
Boom.
Boom. Now I need to take the center pin.
Right.
That's going to go into analog 1. And the center pin here is going to go into analog 0.
And now the Raspberry Pi will know what inputs to take from.
Well, I'm going to tell it.
Or so no, Raspberry
I'm going to be telling it to take. Yeah, Arduino is going to be taking inputs from our A0 and A1, analog 0 and analog 1. And as I rotate each of these potentiometers, those two values will increase and decrease.
Right.
All right. So let's go ahead and take a look at the code that's going to allow me to do this. Let's go ahead and give power to my little
unlimited
Arduino here. And I'm going to give it network connectivity since we now have that option, which is Woo-hoo. So happy. How about that? All right, so let's start this up. Now, here is the code that I'm going to be using for this one. Alex, if you go ahead and come over to this computer. Again, this is the Ethernet sketch. It's slightly changed. But if you go into File, Examples, Ethernet, down below here. Ooh, come on, there we go. You keep going. Where's the Ethernet? Ethernet. This is actually just called the web server. So this is the web server example. Here's what it's going to do. It's super, super simple. You're gonna wonder why there's such a hullabaloo about it. I'm including two libraries, SPI and Ethernet. And this is just the way for me. SPI is how it's communicating with that shield.
Oh, okay.
Over the SPI bus.
That's
the library to do all the things I need for Ethernet. This right here. This is kind of cool for networking, for the people who really liked our Networking 101 series. Remember how we talked about the MAC address?
Mm-hmm.
The media access control. It's the physical address.
Yeah.
Like your Mr. Robot.
That's exactly how I think of it now.
But this is the hexadecimal combination that sets the physical address. In Arduino, I can actually set it for anything I want. On the side of my board, there's actually a address that they gave me that I should use.
But
I don't have to use that.
But we also explain the dangers of doing that because there are certain devices that fall into a certain bracket of MAC addresses.
Yeah.
And if both those devices have the same MAC address, you'll run into conflict.
And especially since here, since I could just load this particular code on 100 different Arduinos, if I plug all those 100 different Arduinos into my network, they all have the same physical address.
Right.
That's going to be a problem. The router will just freak out. It'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, you think you're being super sneaky by using the same MAC address for like all of them? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go back to my window here, so this needs to be unique. In this particular case, I'm using DEADBEEFFEED. And if I change it at all, any of those entries, the router will think it's a different device.
Okay.
So just be aware of that. Now, this is kind of cool. IP address, IP 192.168.0.229. Mm-hmm. I can specify it. So I've actually already set the address that this device is going to be at. It's going to be at 192.168.0.229.
Mm-hmm.
What we will show in the next example is that you don't have to do it this way. You can actually have your Arduino get a DHCP address. So it can automatically get an address from the router.
Okay.
In this particular case, because this is a super simple example, I'm setting this is a static address, 192.168.0.229.
Well, you're going to want a static address if you're going to remote access it, right?
Well, yeah, but there's ways around that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so Ethernet server, this starts up the Ethernet, or actually it sets the Ethernet server to listen to port 80. Remember in Networking 101 we talked about ports? Ports are just the device listening on a specific port for a request for service.
Right.
So this is telling it to start an Ethernet server and listen on port 80, which is HTTP. So it's a standard HTTP server.
Makes sense.
Okay. On my setup, all I'm doing is I'm opening up the serial port, and I'm basically saying, okay, go ahead and wait to send stuff to the serial port. Because this has no screen, the only way I'm going to get data on this is by opening up a serial port.
Okay.
This is all specific to our networking thing. Ethernet begin. Mm-hmm. So it's calling the library. It's saying, okay, go ahead and turn yourself on with the MAC address I specified above, with the IP address I specified above.
Right.
In the next example, I'm not going to specify an IP, and it's just going to get a DHCP address. But I do need a MAC. I need to give it a MAC because it has to be able to identify me on the network.
Okay.
Then it's going to turn on the server. So the server will start listening at port 80.
And then print out servers at?
Right, because I need to know where that server is. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and open up my serial monitor. I'm going to set it for the right port first. And I actually have to upload this code. So let's do that. I'm going to start uploading the code. And as it's uploading, I'm going to go ahead and explain the rest of it. This is just doing one thing. See, in the loop, that's just one clump of code. All this is going to do is it's going to sit there. The Ethernet server is going to sit until it hears a client. So it's going to listen. Once it hears a client, then it's going to go ahead and start running through these instructions. All these instructions are going to do is write to the Ethernet port what a standard HTML file looks like. So this is the header. It's HTTP 1.1, 200, okay, all the way up to the start of HTML. And down here, we have the end of HTML. So everything that's in this area, this is my web page. Okay. And all my web page is going to do is it's going to look at the analog channel, so the two analog inputs that I have, 0 and 1, because it does it until it's greater, no longer less than 2. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to print the value from that channel.
Okay.
Okay, so but in order for this to work, I'm going to need to know what is the serial address. Now, I mean, what is the Ethernet address? The IP address. The IP address is 192.168.0.229, which is exactly what it was supposed to be because I set that as that.
Yeah.
Okay, but now let's go ahead and go into a web page.
Mm-hmm. And then type in the local address.
192.168.0.229? Yeah, 229.
229, yeah.
Okay, so when I do this...
You can't type in the physical address, right? The MAC address and get to it through the address bar?
You could.
But that'd be a pain.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Here's one thing that you... Oh, there we go. You have to remember is Arduinos are kind of slow, so it can take a while for the service to start up. The longest it's ever taken for the service to start up for me was about 3 minutes. Just know that. But now it's running. In the background, this is actually what the server is doing. So the server keeps connecting, serving out the page, disconnecting. Connecting, serving out the page, disconnecting. That's what's happening. And what I've set it to do is to refresh every 5 seconds or so.
Why is that?
That's just what I did.
To demonstrate.
Yeah. But see, now if you see analog input 0, 1 is 0, I should be able to change this. Actually, I think I plugged it into the wrong ports. That was kind of silly. That's my bad. There we go.
The ground and power were...
Yeah, ground was in the wrong slot.
Ah, I see.
Okay, there we go. Now if you go back to that page, you're going to have to zoom in on that.
Where are we?
Enhance. There we go.
Ah.
So if I change, as I turn the wipers, every time it refreshes, you're going to see those values are going to start changing. See?
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Okay. But let's because it's standard HTML, people should know this. Let's jump back over here, Alex. All right, so what I'm going to do is I don't like those things being so small. So I'm going to add something right about here under HTML, and I'm going to say font size plus 6. That's going to make much larger text. The other thing I wanted to change was the refresh. So right now it's refreshing every 5 seconds right here. This is just standard HTML.
Make it faster.
Yeah, so it's saying, okay, every 5 seconds go ahead and ask the server for another connection. Right. I'm going to change that to 1. Let's go ahead and upload that. So what it should do is I've just changed the code. So now when it refreshes the page, first... Yeah. It's going to change the refresh rate to once every second. Every and second it's going to try.
Bigger font.
And a much bigger font. So
is there a danger of refreshing too fast?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Because, again, an Arduino is a very low power device.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a lot of horsepower. If you start requesting too much, it will just start lagging. It will just... I mean, it won't break it.
No.
But you're going to start timing out.
But the equivalent of little tears coming out of the Arduino. Yeah. Like, why would you do that to me?
Let me make it clear. This is not a web server that you might consider. Don't put this on the internet to serve out your web page. That would be a really bad idea. This is just a way for you to connect to your Arduino and
get some data back. Yeah.
Right. People will call this an Internet of Thing,
yeah.
But don't think of it as an Internet of Things device that you would actually plug into the internet.
I see.
With a public address. That would be... really bad idea. Super. Have I expressed how bad that is yet?
No. Tell me more. Tell me why it would be so bad. Because little tears will come out of the
Arduino. Obviously I forgot to put equals, font equal. But the font didn't change, but Notice how it's refreshing much faster. So now it's refreshing every second. So as I turn these wipers, this is not super exciting because these are just values that are changing.
No, but that then means that we can incorporate those into something.
Precisely. So. The fact that I can report these values means I can report anything.
Right.
I can report state of switches, states of relays. I can report temperature, humidity. In other words, if it's a value that I was able to display on my serial console previously, I can now display it through the Ethernet
interface.
Yeah,
I like
that,
it.
Right? Ooh, look at that. It's so fast.
All right, you shouldn't play with knobs that much on TV.
So this is what we're going to be doing, but we're going to be bumping it up a notch.
Okay.
Now, before we go any further, for those people out there who are wondering how they're going to do this on their own, you do need a little bit of gear. The first is, of course, you're going to need an Uno, or an Arduino Uno. We've got a link here for the one that I prefer. This is the Geekcrete Uno R3. This is actually
using an Arduino?
It's a clone, but this is using a genuine Atmel chipset.
Okay.
Which I like, because there are some that are really gray market I don't trust.
Well, and I know in the past we've definitely said you could buy a bunch off eBay if you're planning on doing a bunch of prototype builds. But if you're doing something like this where the balance of your plants hangs in the power of the Arduino that you're using, you should probably get one that
won't die the first time you use it. That's silly like that. The second thing you're going to need is it's a W5100 Ethernet shield. Now, this is the one I'm using. I got a bunch of these. I actually bought them in bulk for like $6 a pop. There is one other option, actually, Alex, if you go to the next one. It's also W5100, but it has PoE. So that's what...
Power over Ethernet?
Precisely. And this is actually a genuine Arduino part. Ooh. What this will allow me to do is I can have a single cable. Rather than having power and Ethernet, this would get it from the PoE port on the board.
And 5 volts? 5 volts?
It takes the 48 volts and it... That's down to 5.
Cool. If only I had a switch that I had taken without permission did.
If only I still had a switch in my house that Ethernet. I could just plug in and have PoE. And
that's
you know.
So weird.
Yeah. Weird.
You're never going to get it back.
Probably not. Okay. All right. So what we're going to do now is let's. Would you say we make the project a little sexier, Brian?
Yes, that's the main goal of any Arduino project is to make it more sexy.
Yeah, because we've been playing with static input, but what I want to do now is I want to go ahead and add a little DHCP into the mix.
Whoa, you sure we can show that?
We're going to get to that in just a bit, but first, these messages. This episode of Know How is brought to you by iFixit. Now, you've heard about them if you've watched Know How. You know that they are the kit, the place that Brian and I love the most to find all the knowledge, all the parts, all the tools we need to get the job done right. Now, I understand you're a maker. You're a DIYer. That's why you're watching the show. But you must know what it's like to try to use the wrong tool. You know, the little Phillips screwdriver that's just a little too small, so you're kind of stripping the screw. Or how about that flat screwdriver that's way too small, and you're just trying to wedge it into a hex nut. It doesn't work really well. What you need is the right tool for the right job, and that's where iFixit can help. iFixit is the premier provider of repair, knowledge, tools, and parts. They've got more than 22,000 free repair guides and 90,000 troubleshooting solutions. The good people at iFixit are experts in consumer electronics repair. They do it. They do their teardowns. They put them on the internet so you see what's inside of your favorite devices. They give you all the repair knowledge that you need for free. Of course, they also sell a wide array of parts and tools to help you get the job done right. They know what they're doing, so they built a toolkit that does too. That's this, the ProTech Toolkit. It's a completely reimagined design. It's just as rugged and portable as before, but even more useful. This kit shows their obsession with detail, from the durable canvas case, from the hand-selected high-quality steel bits, from the custom anodized aluminum driver handle. They've thought of everything so that you only have to worry about the fix. This is going to include their 64-bit driver kit, precision ESD-safe tweezers, including a pair of reverse tweezers, a wide variety of plastic opening tools and picks to safely work on tablets and smartphones without destroying the case as you try to pry them open. They've got a suction cup for display assembly removal, as well as a metal spudger and iFixit's own rubber-handed Jimmy pry tool. The ProTech Toolkit is the last precision toolkit that you'll ever need, and that's why it's backed by a lifetime guarantee. Folks, if you want to do it like we do here on the show, if you want to get your DIY and maker nirvana, you owe it to yourself to try iFixit. The people at iFixit never stop preparing, and with this toolkit under your belt, you won't either. Head over to iFixit.com/twit and use the code KNOWHOW at checkout to save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. Even if you don't buy anything, you can still use their free repair guides, troubleshooting answer forms, and other educational resources on their site anytime your tech has an accident. That's ifixit.com/twit. And we thank iFixit for their support of KnowHow. Okay, Brian, so we've got our Arduino here.
Yes.
With a static server that's just sending out the little values of our potentiometers.
Right.
Interesting, and it's a good foundation, but we want it to do something a bit more. So what if we were to do this, but this time go with DHCP?
Okay, let's do that.
Because this is more akin to something that you would have at home. You plug it in and you wait for it to get an address rather than you assigning it an address.
Right.
So the code for this is actually pretty simple. Let's go ahead and drop back over here. I'm going to close this one over. And we've got this. So it's basically the same code as before with a couple of modifications. So again, I'm including two libraries, SPI and Ethernet.h.
Yeah.
I'm setting the MAC address right here. So that's my physical address. But this is where it's changing. Ethernet client, client, Ethernet server, server 80.
Server 80 is the same, right?
Server 80 is the same, but this is not. Because normally what I did in the previous example was I set an IP address. It was a static IP address of 192.168.0.229.
Yeah.
By putting Ethernet client, client, what I'm saying is go ahead and run through the startup procedures in the library to get a DHCP address.
Right. Right. Let your network handle the rest.
Precisely. And this is going to take a while, so I'm going to go ahead and start uploading it now.
Okay.
Now, I have one function, one main function, and that is the print IP address. What this is going to do, this is going to, on the serial console, it's going to print the IP address once it has it from the DHCP server.
Okay. Before, so then you know.
Right. Before it has it, it'll just be blank. But once it has the address, I'll get it on the serial console. One quick note here.
Yeah.
Just because it shows up on the serial console doesn't mean that the server is ready to serve out pages. It just means it's received the address. And now it's starting up the server. That could take another 60 seconds.
All right. Good to know.
In case you're doing this at home and following along with the video, if you're waiting, just wait a little bit longer, because if you did the code right, it just might
How much waiting is too long, though?
Five minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. 5 minutes is about the timeout. All right. So that's going to be printing my address. Now, in my setup, again, pretty simple. I'm going to open up my serial console. I'm going to print out. If this doesn't get an address, it's going to halt the program because the program's useless.
Right.
That's almost never happened. It's only going to happen if you have a pretty bad network. Okay. Then it's going to start the server. Now, here in Serialer, this is something that I made. This just tells me whether or not this gives me a case back from the. From the Ethernet function in case it fails. But you won't have to use it.
Right.
Okay. Now, in my HTML server, this is going to do the exact same thing that we did before. So it's going to listen. Once it hears from a client, it's going to serve out the page, which is going to include the value of my two wiper pins.
Right.
Okay, and actually, that's my refresh is set back for 5. If you look at my loop, it's only really going to do two things, serial alert and HTML server. So it's going to keep going back and forth, back and forth. So let's go ahead and open up a serial console. Hopefully, my Arduino is
up and running.
Let's see if it's...
Should be.
Are you happy?
Are you happy, Arduino? I don't see any little tears coming out of it, so it should be okay.
Might be taking a little time. Okay, it's still taking longer.
Oh, it's so hot.
It is. Oh, wait, it's getting there. See, once I start seeing those lights.
Blinky lights are good.
Wait, it can be. It's got a little bit of activity. It could also mean that it's failing out on trying to get a DHCP address, which unfortunately I think is what just happened. All right, well, let's try uploading that again. I did send it to the right port, correct?
The com? Yeah. The right com?
Unfortunately, again, because I'm using a really janky third-party router down here.
What is it, the WRT54?
No, it's this old D-Link that was obsolete back in 2008.
I had it.
Yeah, I know. One of the other things to remember about this is one of the reasons why I like static, because if you are using DHCP, because this is such a stripped-down library, because it has to fit in an Arduino, it doesn't handle problems really well. If you have a network issue, it just... says, okay, I'm done.
Okay. Well, fortunately, we've covered static IPs pretty well.
And so. Again, there's a really easy way for us to do it. Actually, Alex, if you go back, all I'd have to do is I'd have to comment out the Ethernet client line, and I'd have to put the set the IP address again for like 192.168.0.229.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's a little okay. Wait, that looks better.
Yeah, it's got another little light lit up.
Okay,
so it could
see
be something.
What are you doing? Oh, I'm light. No. Yeah. No, it's still waiting.
Arduino, you can do it. We just got to cheer it on.
Come
you got
on,
this, little guy.
Arduino.
You got this.
Come on, you can do it.
Come on.
Actually, I don't think it can. I think.
You think you're dead, Arduino?
I think the DHCP server is just completely crapped out.
Psh, we don't need DHCP.
This. Wait. Oh.
You keep giving me false hope. Wait.
Okay, so here we have, it's now received its DHCP address. That took an exceptionally long time. 192.168.0.196. Now, again, just because it reported the address doesn't mean the server is ready to serve. Let's go ahead and type in that address and see what we get. So it's 192.168.0.196. And there we go. Okay, so now it's serving again. You can see these are the instructions for it to serve. And these wipers, I can now change the wipers, and it should
every 5 seconds.
My values.
Though,
there we go. Every 5 seconds, a very slow refresh. Hopefully, though, you've seen the reason why I like using static. DHCP definitely does work, but it's a whole lot slower.
Whole lot slower, and chances are that IP address is going to change next time you unplug it. And plug it back in.
Well, I can actually force it to change. All I'd have to do is go in here and change like this to 01.
And now it has a new MAC address.
Now it's a new MAC address.
So it's a whole new device.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yes. And if it has the same MAC address as another device, then SOL on that. But.
Precisely.
Okay.
Now, this is okay, but you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to take some knowledge that we dropped on them previously.
I thought you were going to say sexy again. I was like, I don't think it could get sexier than DHCP.
No. How about if we added like this?
Whoa.
Okay, so because this, now we're talking about something that's in an actual deployment. In my screen, the Arduino, the Growduino that I've created, I don't want to have to connect it to my computer via USB in order to get the address.
Yeah,
that's really not useful.
Especially if it's just that little amount of data that you want to see.
Super small amount of data, and I have to bring out a laptop. I mean, what's going to happen is I'm just not going to end up using it. Like, if it breaks, I'll just go, turn it off. What would be better is if I actually put a screen on it so that I could, at a glance, see the IP address so that rather than having to plug in, I could just go onto my laptop and connect.
Let's do it.
So just like before, when we're playing with the LCD screen, we need to give it power. So I'm going to use the 5 volts that I'm also giving to the wiper here. So this goes to 5 volts, and this goes to ground. There we go, and I've got a little light up on my screen. And white is my SDA, that's my data, and brown is my clock line. And I know, because I've done this a lot, that SDA is going to be 4, and SCL is going to be 5. Oh, by the way, we had a really good question in our Google Plus group on why I don't use pull-up resistors. Normally, you would have to use pull-up resistors for these.
Yeah.
It's because on the SDA and the SCL clock lines on the Revision 3 Atmel chipset, it has an internal pull-up resistor.
Well, of course.
I know, naturally.
From.
Okay, so what I want to do now is I want to make this easier for me by making it so that my IP address is reported on the screen.
Cool.
Let's do this. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and close this example, and we're going to bring in example numero. Actually, let's close the COM port too. Number 3. So this is doing the same thing. This is doing a DHCP server just like we did in the last example. However, you may notice I've added a bunch of libraries. Wire.h, which is the way that we talk to our I2C devices. I'm also adding an include for the library for the liquid crystal I2C, which is how we access our display.
Mm-hmm.
And then this actually declares the screen so I can use it. Okay, everything else is the same. I still have my physical address set for this.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the Ethernet client and the Ethernet server started up right there.
Yeah.
I'm still printing to the serial port, although I shouldn't need it because this time it should go straight to the screen.
The screen, right.
Now let's look at what has changed down in the setup. In the setup, I've just added this, which we saw in the last episode of Arduino 102.
Mm-hmm.
Turning on the I2C bus, I'm initializing the LCD, and I'm turning on the backlight. If I leave any of those out, it doesn't work.
I mean, I guess you could leave the backlight out, right? If you wanted to save power?
If you, I mean, yeah, but then you'd have to, like, get a flashlight to see it.
So, okay, so don't never do, mind. Don't forget that.
Okay. Now, if I look at my my loop, I now have a third function here. So I've done serial alert. I've done LCD report, which is what allows me to push information to the screen, and then the HTML server, which is what allows me to serve out pages.
Okay.
So let's look at the LCD report function, because that's what's new. And while we're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and upload this, because we've already seen how long it can take for these changes to take. All right, so let's look at the LCD report. Super simple here. Mm-hmm. This is all that's in the function. I'm going to set the cursor for 00, so that's at the very up left corner.
Right.
And then I'm going to print
IP address.
IP address. Then I'm going to set the cursor for one below it, one line below.
Mm-hmm. And it, what is it? It's four lines vertically and what, like 20 something?
It's 4 by 20. Right?
4 by 20, yeah.
And what I'm doing is I'm printing each octet. So octet 1, octet 2, octet 3, and octet 4. Mm-hmm. So that's like 192.168.0. Whatever. That's four octets.
Okay.
So all I'm doing is I'm printing IP address, and then below it, I'm printing the address at which the device has received an Ethernet address.
Cool.
Now, this is not going to display anything until it's actually received the DHCP address from our router, which we already know takes quite a while because right. of the network setup we have here.
Can we just static it again?
We could static it, but Brian, what's the fun in that?
You know, time constraint stuff.
No, I don't do time constraints.
Oh, okay. All right, well...
There we go.
Let it roll then.
Okay, so Andre, excuse me. We have time constraints.
Oh, we do have time constraints.
The director.
Uh-huh. Okay, so Mr. Director, actually, hold on.
What do you got back there that you're doing?
This adjusts the contrast of the screen.
Oh.
This right here.
That screw?
That little screw. And actually, unfortunately, I think I might have jiggled it in transit, which is a problem.
Don't worry, though, Padre. Sponsor of the show, iFixit, probably has a screwdriver that we could use, but all the kits have disappeared from the studio.
We are bad people. We've stolen all the iFixit kits from the studio. Give it a second. It's going to come up here. Oh, wait.
I
didn't actually send it to the...
Oh, that red at the bottom looks bad.
Hold on. It's bad.
Oh, no. Oh.
Hold on.
Oh.
Hold on.
Wait for it. Code
there
uploaded.
We go. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Now it's gone. Okay. And you can tell that it's initialized
because
the blockiness is gone. Right. But give it time. Okay. Wait. It's got to get a DHCP address.
Making sure the camera can see it.
Hopefully you're seeing why I do have a recalcitrance to use DHCP. I'm a big fan of statics. But the other thing about using DHCP is it means I can take this and put it on any network, mm-hmm. and it should work. If I have a static, I'd have to go in and change the static every time I move networks.
And you're a big fan of leaving the plastic on everything.
Go ahead and take it off.
Whoop.
See, now it's not new anymore.
No, it's still new. Don't worry. I'll leave it.
Why must you do that? Okay, so my address is 192.168.0.196. Now, it's going to take a while. Let me show you, if you go back to my screen here, Alex. One of the things I like to do is if I open a command window, I'm going to ping that address, 192.168.0.196-T. And, okay, once it starts saying it's got a reply, it means that the server is up.
Nice.
If it wasn't up, it would be saying, you know, no response. But I should now be able to go here. And there we go. Now I'm getting my my web page, and my wipers are active every 5 seconds or so. There we go.
Nice.
Ta-da! Okay, so now we've got it working with an I2C device, mm-hmm. which means I now have something that I can move from network to network, and they don't even have to log in. I mean, I'm using a computer here with a serial console, but I don't have to. I could just look at that address at the top, and it tells me exactly where I need to point a client.
Very cool. I like that. And now we don't have to plug in the whole laptop setup.
Precisely. And this is what we want. Remember, we're going to make our device, our Groduino, is going to be portable. It should be able to go from one place to another. It's going to be ruggedized, so it's not easy to break.
Right.
You can't drown it. It should be semi-waterproof.
Should be
semi-waterproof. but most importantly, someone who doesn't know anything about programming, I should be able to give them my Groduino, and they should just be able to look at the screen. And when they see
it, be able to interface with it.
That should be it.
And then access it remotely.
And that's what I'm going for.
Very cool.
Now, in order for us to move to the next step, what we need to do, because remember, our Groduino is designed to do things at certain times. Turn the lights on, turn the lights off, turn the watering on, turn the watering off.
And then send you update reports.
Precisely. But if only we had a device we've already played with on Arduino 102 that could keep real time.
It's not Alex?
No.
You just have a physical person watching it and then just sending you text messages when things happen?
What you're saying is you want an Arduino device where Alex just sits there looking disapprovingly at you, just like...
Mm-hmm. I do that anyway.
I feel shame.
Okay, so what we've got is this. We've added an RTC, of course, a real-time clock into this. So this has already been 3D printed. I was tired of the...
I like it.
Yeah, I didn't want the raggedy. I wanted something to look little sexy.
Look at that.
Cool. Look at it. It's so cute, Brian.
I mean, it's either a bomb or a Groduino. There's only two things this could be.
I need to plug you in. All right, so here we go.
Plug in.
I'm going to show you the code for this.
But plastic's on this screen, too.
Yeah, so basically... Go ahead, take it off.
No,
take it off. No, take off the plastic. No, it's okay.
I want it to be new someday.
Be multicultural. So all I've done is, and we saw this in Arduino 102, I've plugged in an RTC here into the I2C bus... so that I can now get the time. So it'll be getting me time, and look at that. So I have time and the IP address.
But what is the lower part?
Oh, pages served. So, like, for example, if I were going to go to the active address here, let's make sure it's ready. If you switch back to my computer, Alex, ping 192.168.0.198-T. Okay, so the server is ready. So if I switch over to 198 here.
On the browser...
Okay, it should be coming. There we go.
Oh,
so now it's serving out time.
Interesting.
Now, it's kind of serving out time because
it's on a 5-second refresh.
It's on, I think, like a 1 second or 2 second. It's not perfect. But if you look back over to the screen here, Alex.
No, it's not.
There we go. So every time a client requests, it's going to increase the counter for how many pages it's served out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's requesting a lot, huh?
Well, yeah, every second or so.
To update that clock. That's cool.
Which, by the way, I should tell you, is a horrible, horrible way to display the time. don't do that. Don't do that. This is just for demonstration purposes, folks.
Will this count up to triple digits?
Oh, actually, let's look at the code for this. But before we look at the code, you know what I want to do, Brian?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I want to take a moment for these messages.
Previously on Twit.
The company is Digivinyl. I don't know if you remember this. Make your own vinyl record by using all the old plastic bottles
in
your house.
I love this idea.
You could be the first podcast
on vinyl.
Security Now.
Tavis Ormandy, our favorite security researcher, tweeted shortly after toweling himself off, I had an epiphany in the shower and realized how to get code execution in LastPass. This is apparently very sophisticated, but also it's going to require some re-engineering.
The new screensavers.
I'm about to hop on Galactic Attack. It's a converted Kong roller coaster that brings a little Samsung Gear VR into the action. Mixed reality experience.
Yep, we're in space.
Okay.
And we're about to die.
Ah! Ah!
Wow, this is really weird.
Twit. Technology for your eyes and ear holes.
Digivina is an April Fool's gag. I can't leave you hanging like this. There's no such thing. Although, if I were you, I'd make it.
And we're back. Okay, so we've got our Arduino set up with our little screen here. It's showing us time, it's showing us the IP address, and it's showing out pages served. Let's look at the code that it took to make this happen. It's actually not all that complicated. So
well, we're kind of building on the foundation of everything that we've covered.
This is the whole idea.
I see where you're going with this.
Every program gets a tiny bit more complicated, but it incorporates the lessons from the past.
Yes.
So let's look at the code. So just like last time, we are including the wire and the liquid crystal libraries because we need to be able to access I2C and the screen. I'm including this. These are remember when I did the example in the last episode for the real-time clock. This is what I'm using. These variables are what I'm using to determine whether or not the screen actually has to be rewritten.
Yes.
Right? Because if I don't have to rewrite a number, I don't want to rewrite it because it makes the screen flicker.
Right.
So all this does is it holds the last value. If the last value hasn't changed, it doesn't rewrite it.
Smart.
Okay. Now, here, again, I'm adding the library so I can access Ethernet. This is interesting. This is the counter. Now, I'm using a variable we have not yet used on KnowHow. I'm using an unsigned integer. The reason why I'm using an unsigned integer is because a regular int,
yeah,
we know it's a 16-bit variable, so it's 65,536 possible values. It's actually 535 because you've also got zero there, mm-hmm. correct? Here's the issue. That's 65,535, but half of those are negative and half of those are positive.
Okay.
I'm not going to use any negative values. I'm not negatively serving pages.
Right.
So if I use unsigned, I reserve all of it, 65,535.
As positive.
Positive values.
Okay, that
right?
makes sense.
That's why I'm using that. And then there's actually another part of that. If I go to the down to the bottom here, this right here is where I increment the counter. So every time this serves out a page, it's going to increase the counter by one. That's what increases the counter on the screen.
Right.
However, this is okay. Come back to us, Alex.
Huh?
Because we have a this is a PSA
knowledge bomb
public
is
service announcement. This is a knowledge bomb. This is how buffer overflow errors get made. Whenever you don't account for something going beyond a value,
yes,
that's when you're introducing an exploit into your code.
Okay.
So now if you go back to my code, Alex, what I've done here is I have an if statement right after the counter. Mm-hmm. If this becomes greater than 65,534, which means the value is 65,535,
uh-huh.
set it back to zero. The
so
reason why I do that,
itself.
Precisely, because if this goes to 65,536,
what would happen?
I'm overflowed. I'm now allowing the program to write into parts of memory that it shouldn't write, or it just freezes.
Okay, so it could... I see. It would probably freeze because it's writing into other parts of the program.
If I'm lucky... it will freeze.
If
I'm not lucky, and especially since I've now connected this to a network,
yeah.
someone could use this to write code to memory and then execute it.
Wow, okay.
When we're talking about all these exploits in the wild, that's the most common one.
Yeah.
Someone didn't check a counter, and it overflows, and now it's doing something that they didn't expect.
Okay.
So whenever they talk about checking values or checking ranges, this is what they're doing. That little piece of code right there allows me to make sure that that's never going to go to a value that I did not expect.
Do you think something like that happened with your project where it over-fertilized your plants, or was that something else?
That was something else.
That was something else.
That
okay.
was just bad code. I would like to say that... No, that was bad code.
It wasn't a buffer overflow.
It was stupid. I'm a bad person.
That's good to know, though.
Yeah, okay, it's good to know. Okay, so the rest of it is actually relatively simple. It's the same project that we had before. The only difference is I've added in all of these libraries and all these functions that I had from Arduino, the last episode of Arduino 102, to include all of the functions I need to read from the real-time clock.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So and when I do that... what it allows me to do is this. Let's go to my loop. My loop is just LCD screen and HTML server. So it's both of those are going to call the RTC, get the data from the RTC, and then serve it out through the Ethernet port.
Right.
Yeah. So and actually, what was the address again?
It is...
You can see it, Brian.
Yeah, 192.168.0.198.
And there we go. Exactly.
Ooh.
So that's what it's doing.
Boom.
Pretty simple, right?
Yeah, simple. But I can see how we can now build on this to make your remote access and have a display where you don't have to have the laptop hooked up.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Now, we're going to be taking a break from Arduino 102. We're going to be coming back in Arduino 103.
Getting interesting.
I know. But, you know, this is how know-how rules.
You got to take a breather every once in a while.
Next Thursday, we're bringing in Patrick Delahanty.
Yeah, for some cosplay stuff.
It's,
right?
It's starting to be Comic-Con season.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be bringing in the expert to show you how you're going to show up at your next Comic-Con without looking like a noob.
There's a reason why we left him on the board, right?
Yeah, he's a good guy. So he'll be here to show us some of the secrets of cosplay, and also I'm doing an upgrade to the steampunk goggles.
Yeah.
Because mine got stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen. I was at a first competition for robotics, and I put the hat down for like 5 seconds.
They take the whole thing?
They took the whole thing.
Wow, that's kind of greedy. Not just the goggles, huh?
It's funny because, you know, that was one of the kind of the I won't call it lame, but one of the easiest projects we've done on know-how, and that's the one that every time I wear, people go, oh, where can I get
popular.
One of those?
Yeah.
Well,
we'll build it.
We're going to make it better now.
Boom.
So,
yeah.
You stole the wrong one.
Was it the one that had, like, smoke that would come out of it? Or is it...
No, that's
this is going to be the new one?
I can't show people that version because there is a danger of it setting their head on fire.
Well, that's like any of the projects that we do. That's a danger. If you watch this show, your head might be set on fire.
Indeed. Folks, we know that this was a lot of information, and we don't want you to have to try to copy the code from what you saw on the screen. Actually, the code is available right now. It's back in the Dropbox. I'm sorry. I have a new public link. But we're going to make it easy for you to get. All you have to do is go to our show notes. Brian, where do they find those?
You could go to the show notes, or you could just... watch the show and pause the screen every time Padre's on the code and copy. No, that would be terrible.
You keep suggesting that. That is a horrible suggestion.
Just as like a torture device for people. But no. You can easily get the code and everything you need at our show notes at twit.tv/KH. And not just the show notes, but the shows themselves. Crazy, I know. But you can download them and or subscribe. And if you subscribe, you won't miss any of these long-form episodes that we're doing, like with the Arduino or the networking. Or what was it, like the vlogging studio
how about
that we did?
This coming Monday, where we're doing a Raspberry Pi tour machine.
Yeah, which we totally haven't filmed yet.
No, that's in the future.
It was a good episode, though, from what I think we did.
From
in
what
the
I will have remembered by that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, don't forget that you can find us on our social media group in Google Plus. It's the best place to go because, well, it's a community. Just go to Google Plus, look for Know How. Very short approval process, but once you're in, you get access to almost 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. These are people who are in every step of the Maker DIY journey. So you can find new people who maybe you can help. You can find experts who can help you with a project that you're stuck in, or maybe you just want to ask a question or show a project that we can show off here on Know How. Again, go to Google Plus and look for Know How.
That's not the only place, Padre.
No.
If you want to find out what we're doing outside of Know How, or maybe an upcoming project we're doing, or just what is our favorite GIF of the week, usually has to do with corgis. You can follow me at @cranky_hippo on Twitter.
And you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. There is a third member of our crew. He's the heart and soul, really.
He's filled with so much emotion. It just pours into the show.
His memory has been burned into the back of our knowledge holes.
Yes.
Yes. And he's
I'm imagining that, and it's scary.
We call him Steve.
Is it Steve?
It's Steve.
I should know. I've known him since like fifth grade.
Excuse me, Padre. It's Alex.
No, that's Steve. What it was.
It's definitely Steve.
Good old Alex.
But if you want to follow Steve, you can find him at twitter.com/ANELF3.
That's right. Yeah. He's the flow master.
He is. Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how.
Growduino, your remote access, it. That doesn't work at all, but that's okay. I don't care. I was like, wait, it's not just Growduino. It's a lot of things.